Welcome to the Unblocking Crypto Podcast. This podcast is not financial advice. It's meant for entertainment purposes only. These are just the opinions of a couple of rambling wrecks.
Welcome back to episode number 116 of Unblocking Crypto. Oh, great to see you again.
Good to see you, bud. Let's do it.
Yeah, we survived the halving. So it is, Bitcoin didn't implode or anything crazy like that. And there was actually a little bit of fireworks that happened during all of this. So the first block that was mined and the new halving, I think someone put in 36, 37 Bitcoin. So it was like $2.4 million in fees on that first block. And I think over the first five, it was something like $3.8 million in fees, which is just crazy compared to what they have been seeing and what they're expecting with all these block rewards to go down.
Yeah, I've got a friend here, and I was talking to him, and we were at a charity basketball game, and we were just in the crowd talking. I'm like, man, it'd be kind of cool to get together for the halving. It's on, at the time, it looked like it was gonna be on Saturday, 4/20. And so I was like, you know, that'd be neat. He's like, I love throwing parties. What do we need to do? He's like, I'm in. Say no more. We can have, you know, this kind of food. And da, 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 da. I'm like, oh, okay, cool. Well, then I was like, let's get back together, you know, a little later in the week as the timing kind of gets closer. And so, you know, maybe Tuesday or Wednesday, I'm like, hey, it's looking more like Friday night. You know, there's a baseball game. We can just chill out, watch a baseball game, and watch the blocks get mined. And so that's the way it worked out. So we had like a whopping six adults there, maybe seven. I was like, well, one, I did absolutely nothing on the previous halving. Like I kind of knew it was there. I didn't pay attention that day. I wasn't looking at Bitcoin. You know, I was working, and honestly, when I was in the middle of COVID crazy, you know, nonsense. So, but I mean, I did literally nothing for that having, and this time, like I had my phone on mempool and watched the blocks go. And you, like you said, there were some fireworks, like on the having block, they actually had like a firework thing going on in the background of the mempool, website. So that was neat. And then the first thing I saw was, holy crap, 37 Bitcoin in transaction fees. So yeah, that first Bitcoin, the having block, was worth 40 Bitcoin. And it was funny because it was, whether it was more miners coming on to try to mine the halving block, or whether it was just coincidence because of the randomness and everything, I felt like blocks were getting mined very quickly. And then after the halving, there were several that were mined in like a minute or two, like just back to back to back. And so it was kind of neat to watch. And those transaction fees were elevated. But it's just, whatever, man. It happens one time. It's like I said last week. It's, you know, Bitcoin made up its new calendar, and the halving is like New Year. And so it was kind of fun to get together. And afterward, I don't leave parties very well. You know, I usually stick around and talk. You know, the big conversations usually happen when everybody's already gone. And so I, you know, we're sitting there talking. It's like, yeah, it's funny. 4 years from now, there'll be another halving. And this year we had seven people sitting around. Nobody even knew what was going on. And, you know, Bitcoin Magazine did a YouTube live feed where they were just had some guests come on. It was kind of like a podcast that they did for a while. And so he's like, well, we got another TV. I'll just throw that up. There's 4,300 viewers on, you know, the biggest Bitcoin halving show out there. So it's like, nobody knows about this. Like, we still feel crazy and it doesn't make sense. But I'm like, you know, 4 years from now, it could be a totally different thing. I mean, everybody could be, you know, paying attention to it and be aware. So I did hear that a lot, you know, like the Bitwise guys, you know, they talk a lot about what their investors are saying. And they're saying a lot of them are using the word halving. Like, they know what, they're aware of it, and they understand at least on a super, super basic level. So yeah, I saw, you know, it was kind of, it was interesting and worth paying attention to. But B, I think the last one meant very little to me. The next one might mean a lot to a lot of people. So it's worth paying attention to, and it's worth talking about.
Yeah. Even my wife kind of asked me what's going on. She's like, I keep seeing this on all my news feeds. Can you tell me what this actually is?
And quit logging into my social media and looking at Bitcoin stuff and messing with my algorithm.
Yeah. But I mean, it's crazy. I mean, they're making about seven Bitcoin per block, before the halving, and they expected that to drop to about half, and it was averaging like 22 Bitcoin. So it's like more than 3x. Like, none of this really made sense. And I mean, great for the miners. I mean, shoot, the gas prices went up crazy high too. We've talked about that with Ethereum in the past, but Bitcoin went from sub $10 to $170 for a transaction, right? And now it's kind of come back down, but it happens on every chain. When something crazy happens, everybody wants to try to be the one to do this. Gas prices are going to increase.
Yeah, especially, you know, that Bitcoin halving, the halving Satoshi, if you're into like the ordinals and all of the like special sats stuff, that one would be more valuable. But also, it's just in Bitcoin nerdy people's behavior to spend money for no reason, to do stuff that doesn't make sense because it's neat. And so I thought that's what was going on. I felt like everybody that had a miner spun it up just to as a lottery ticket to try to mine that block, which I still think that's fun and cool, because in 4 years, based on what I'm seeing with all these miners and these huge operations and, you know, 1 gigawatt mining operations and stuff, if you got a miner in your basement, you're not mining.
Yeah, no, it'll be interesting. I mean, they kind of talked about the cost per mining Bitcoin. It hasn't really doubled yet, but it is definitely going up higher. And the amount of exahash of mining power that you're seeing too is going up. So all of a sudden, a lot of these guys, is it going to make sense to still mine Bitcoin, or do they have to do something different? And I mean, there's talk about, how does this affect AI, right? Can you leave Bitcoin mining and go help with the AI side? Although I don't think most of the miners they have are going to do anything for the AI side. So there's still a kind of a lot to figure out on what these guys are going to do.
Yeah. So when Bitcoin hit the halving and it was kind of like New Year, it kind of made me do the same thing I do at New Year's on the calendar, where it's like kind of think about the future period and kind of just think, you know, instead of reading. And so the first thing I was like thinking about was, because of all the craziness with the blocks and the hash rate, I'm like, okay, normally what happens after a halving is miners capitulate. A lot of their hardware becomes unprofitable. They turn it off and shut it down, and they focus on the next, like investing on better equipment, or they're just done. And so I'm like, okay, well, the mining hash rate is crazy high, and they were mining blocks left and right. I mean, a week or two before, I guess it was 2 weeks before the halving, it looked like it was going to be on the 20th. And then a week and 5 days before the halving, it had moved all the way back into the 19th. So we're mining blocks faster than 10 minutes in this period approaching the halving. So that means when they do the difficulty adjustment, it's going to be more difficult to mine. So let's say the difficulty adjustment gets harder. Hash rate comes down, right? Because now you don't have a lot of people rushing, like turning their miners on in order to try to get the halving block and all of these things. So you have your normal miners that are on the margin coming offline. So you have, theoretically, we're going to have less hash rate in the next 2 weeks, but we're going to have a much higher difficulty adjustment. So if we do that, then it's going to, the block times are going to be longer in that next 6,102 blocks, right? Or whatever it was, 2016 blocks are going to take a lot longer. That means less Bitcoin. Not only is the reward now 3.125 Bitcoin per block plus the transaction fees, if they average 15 minutes a block over a 2 week period, all those miners' revenues are going to be hurting, right? But yeah. It helps that the price is high in the 60s. You know, that's profitable for a lot of miners, even when you cut the block reward in half. But if you cut them another 33% by going to 15 minutes instead of 10 over the next 2 weeks, that hurts too. So, you know, in my head, I'm like, man, that's a lot less revenue per day for these miners. And, you know, there is the transaction fee, the higher transaction fees in order to kind of help offset some of that. But like we talked about, it's already come down, you know, back to something like normal. And then there is a desire for the big public miners to publish how much Bitcoin they mine per month. That has become kind of a metric that investors look at. And so they're motivated to keep things online and mine more Bitcoin, but they don't really get to pick, right? If the difficulty adjustment goes up and they're still mining the way they normally do, that's not good for them, especially if we get, I mean, if you get 15 to 20 minute blocks on average. And so, okay, that's a bad 2 weeks, but then it may swing the other way. And then you got a really big difficulty adjustment down, and then you're mining shorter. And then it's, you know, so I think there's, in theory, there could be this whiplash mining impact that takes a little while to settle out, which isn't the end of the world, because it is, I mean, 2 weeks, anybody can float 2 weeks. If these miners can't take a loss for 2 weeks, then they're already out of business by now. So anyway, that was kind of my first thought, and it kind of fits where we're talking about the kind of weirdo stuff that happened on the block mining side around
the halving. It seems to me that a lot of the miners are actually selling, right? I mean, I don't think they believe that now is a time to sell, when it kind of goes back to everybody's holding on, nobody's selling. I mean, if that continues to happen, now the supply has just been cut in half. So the price theoretically has to go up as long as the inflows into the ETFs continue to happen and everything else. I mean, you look at South Korea, for the first time ever, South Korea had more crypto trading volume than the U.S. So now you have a tiny country of South Korea that is overtaking the U.S. in the amount of trading volume in crypto. Right. And if the U.S. actually kind of makes themselves aware of what's going on, and I mean, you kind of said it earlier, it's 4,300 people paying attention to the halving. If the rest of the U.S. starts to pay attention, what happens with the trading volume in the U.S.?
Yeah. So if South Korea is doing that sort of volume and the ETFs are in and the ETFs are growing, you know, and, right? Like Hal's bullish about Bitcoin, surprise. And so, you know, along the same lines as kind of thinking about the mining stuff, I was thinking about, all right, where does price go, right? Because that's like the most fun thing to think about. And one, it's like, I have no idea. You know, if the mining thing shakes up and the news articles get a hold of it, there could be all sorts of fear and uncertainty that they pump into the crowd. But like, you know, I'm like, okay, the last halving basically went from 10,000 to 60,000. It's like a 6x. The last time I was super convinced around the halving that we were going to 100,000, right? There was stock to flow. There was like all of this stuff, laser eyes till 100K. And it was one of those things was like, oh man, this thing's baked in. This is what we're doing. No idea we're going to get FTX and BlockFi and the Chinese mining ban and all these headwinds that I would have never seen them coming. And I guess there will be headwinds that I will not see coming on this one. But the thing is, you know, last time we started, you know, the bull run in my head around 10,000, this time I feel like we're in it. And I mean, we're early, but we're at 60,000. 6x from here is 360,000. And Ecoinometrics, which has some cool charts, like they do a little weekly newsletter, but they always do these halving charts and compare previous halvings and average the previous halvings and kind of plot where the price is on the current one. And because of our starting point on this halving cycle, like the average, if you average all three previous cycles, then they're like, yeah, you know, the chart shows like $1 million of Bitcoin on this one. But that first halving to me is so wild that I think I just throw it out. You know, going to 25 Bitcoin, nobody knew how to do it. Coinbase wasn't there and all that. But if you just look at the last two, it's like 500,000. If you look at just the last halving, it's over 300,000. And so I'm like, man, that seems like a stretch, right? I mean, I've been expecting to see $100,000 Bitcoin and, you know, for almost 4 years now. And so it just seems like it's tough to do. And I'm like, 300,000. Okay. What does that really mean? $300,000 Bitcoin is about 6 trillion in market cap. To get to 6 trillion in market cap from here, we need about $4.8 trillion. And so that basically is $48 billion of inflows. based on like that 100x multiplier. You know, a dollar in to Bitcoin is on average in a bull run about $100 increase on the market cap. And so I'm like, all right, $48 billion over 18 to 24 months is not crazy, right? I mean, forget South Korea. That wasn't on my radar, but I'm like, well, these ETFs and, you know, the bigger and bigger players are getting in and smaller players are getting in bigger ways. And, you know, a couple billion dollars a month isn't, that's not wild. So, you know, if you're talking $300,000 Bitcoin in this cycle, assuming we still have cycles, it's not crazy to think. Now, it feels weird because I'm just, like I said, if something hasn't happened in 3 or 4 years that I expect to happen, then it's hard for me to be like, oh yeah, it's definitely going to happen this time, you know, but I still think, I think we definitely hit six figures. Once we get through the $100,000 mark, I think the psychological barrier is a lot less when you go above that and like the 150 and the 200 and things like that. So to me, you know, looking at having reflection and forecasting and all that, you know, I think we had this conversation to start off the new year for this year. And I think this cycle kind of, it's hard for me to come off of my numbers that I predicted, you know, like that's a couple $100,000 Bitcoin seems super reasonable.
Well, we talked a couple weeks ago about, and I forget who said it was $100 trillion that kind of the investment advisors had access to. And the expectation was 1% of that would be put into Bitcoin, right? And like we've talked about, we probably see that once people start putting in 1%, that quickly jumps to 2, 3, 5% or more. So 1% of that 100 trillion is 100 billion, right? And the expectation was it was going to take 12, 18, 24 months at least, right? So we were 10 down with 1 trillion. So we were 10 down with 990 billion to go. So talking about 48 billion doesn't seem like a lot when you start looking at it from those numbers. Now, will that happen and how quickly? That's still kind of to be determined, but it is definitely on a path. And I guess one of the other things you mentioned was FTX and some of the other problems. Luna, I mean, the stablecoin collapse that Luna had created a ton of problems. And what we're starting to see now is almost a bigger focus on stablecoins. So the U.S. just announced some, or I guess two senators announced some new stablecoin legislation that they're trying to get passed. And shocker, it's Cynthia Lummis as being one of them and yeah. Gillibrand is the other, right? But one of the big things that they have in there is no algorithmic stablecoins. But they do see, which I think is not a bad thing, and they do see kind of a need to start to regulate the stable coins. And we've talked about it before, is stable coins might be a bigger use case than Bitcoin for a lot of people, especially with PayPal now integrating the ability to move their stable coins to 160, 170 countries for free. Right. So it's definitely making waves. I think the only problem with that is some people worry that what they're trying to do, it almost puts all of the focus on USDC. And it is kind of making itself a Trojan horse into a backdoor CDBC instead of really allowing some of the more innovative and smaller market cap stablecoins to kind of surface. It's going to be, there's only going to be a couple of guys that'll be able to survive this regulation piece. So we'll see what actually happens with that.
Yeah. And it's funny, like stablecoins are more interesting to me than the vast majority of altcoins. It's because like Tether has something like 60 employees and they do like $6 billion in profit in a year. So they have like $100 million in profit per year per employee. That's wild. But they also are like a huge buyer of U.S. treasuries and a huge, like they back their stablecoin, at least the majority of it with actual assets. And then those assets spin off. And so to me, that's a super interesting way to do it because the stablecoin thing, you have to maintain your peg, right? Like, As soon as Luna lost its peg, it was over. Like it was like rapid decline. And so if you're backing it with real assets that can be verified and people can depend on it, whether it's Tether, I'm not sure how Circle does it, but you know, I just happened to hear some stuff on Tether this week. I'm like, this is a super way, a valuable way to do it, because you're backing it with stuff. If the CBDC is not backed by anything, right? By the, it's just the trust in the government that is issuing the CBDC. So at least, I mean, that puts me in like, well, stablecoins almost like a, at least it's a commodity backed currency, or at least it's backed by something that's not air. And so that's for, if I'm in a country where my currency's falling apart, but I still have to buy milk, eggs, and bread, stablecoins and like a no brainer if I can trust it to not get like just decline, fall apart, right? Like Luna did. And so it stinks that that happened with Luna, and people kind of have that in their head, but maybe they don't. Maybe they don't even, they're not even aware of it in a lot of other countries. But for me, man, if you could have a private stablecoin, I think there's a ton of value there for people that on their day-to-day spending in other countries, even though it's tied to the U.S. dollar and the U.S. dollar's fiat, blah, 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 all this other stuff. But you've got real value backing it up, which, and yeah, you can print more, but you've got to buy more commodities to support it. So, you know, it's better in theory, in my head, at least it's got an advantage over US dollars, even though it's tied to the US dollar, in that they can't just make more for free.
So speaking of trust, right? I mean, you talked about Tether, and Tether is probably the biggest guy out there, close to 70% market share. Although there's always been that question on, do they really have the assets? And right, there's just a, kind of that cloud hanging over them. What is interesting is, so Binance keeps over $1 billion of funds, what they call SEFU or whatever, which is their, in case something happens, they have those funds to kind of repay their customers. They just transferred a lot of those funds. It was in Bitcoin, BNB, and I think Ethereum. Most of the Bitcoin and BNB just got transferred over to USDC. So not Tether, but USDC, who is a much smaller player in the stablecoin, not a small player, but they're a long ways behind Tether in the number two spot. So it is, I mean, talking about trust, they're still being controlled by certain entities. To me, like the maker, the DAI, whatever that is, where it's kind of an over collateralized stablecoin, is still probably the one that is the most decentralized. But it's also one of the more difficult ones for most people to kind of even figure out and understand too. It's not simple like someone buying treasury notes and just saying we have the assets.
Yeah, I haven't gotten into the details on all, on the various stable coins. That may be something I'll look into, because I am curious about it. One, there's only a couple to look at. It's not like the altcoin, you know, blue ocean of crazy different things. It's like there's a handful of the big ones, and they have different strategies and things like that. So, but I think the use case is way clearer, and it's just so well defined. We're trying to be a digital dollar that people can use without having to go through, well, without having to go through banks. You know, it's kind of like, it seems helpful, and it doesn't seem like a super, like a company trying to make a profit, even though it is, but it seems like there's a place for it in the market. And I'm curious about it.
Yeah. So speaking of the market, I guess another kind of big thing to talk about, we mentioned the ETFs a little bit, but GBTC, Grayscale's Bitcoin Trust, has announced that they are planning to come out with this Bitcoin Mini, which will now have the lowest ETF fees of everything. And it theoretically should be a non-taxable move to go from GBTC to BTC. And they have the BTC ticker, right? So I think that's even better for them. But I'll be interested to see if this somewhat stops the hemorrhaging from Grayscale, because it is now, I think BlackRock is, yeah, they're on the verge of overtaking Grayscale at this point, which was crazy considering how much Grayscale was leading at what point in this space.
So as a GBTC holder, when I bought a small amount back in 2022, you're like, I'm just kind of holding mine, right? I got pretty decent gains, and I don't really want to pay the taxes on them. And I know I'm paying 1.5% fee, but it's annoying to pay taxes. And I'm not one to reward bad behavior. I feel like selling the Bitcoin and paying taxes rewards the government for their bad behavior, and keeping GBTC pays them 1.5%, rewarding their bad behavior. So I'm in a bit of a dilemma. So when they announced this mini BTC ETF, so I was looking at it like, okay, great. And so initially they seeded 10% of my holdings and everyone else's in GBTC is automatically going to be put into BTC. So that's a non-taxable move. And then anything after I do after that would be a tax liability. So I don't know if this is like smart for GBTC and Grayscale, or if this is just them reacting. I don't know if this was part of the plan or if they're just reacting based on, holy cow, we thought we'd lose 20% of our holdings and we've lost 50% in 3 months. We need to do something. I can't tell because it's not like they expose any of this stuff. But not only did they come out with the mini BTC ETF, it's got the lowest fee out of everybody, which is like, I think it's like
0.19%. No, 0.15. The next lowest is 0.9. So, I mean, they went more than 20% lower than the next person.
Yeah, I mean, it's super low. And like, man, if they, yes, they've earned 3 months of 1.5% on a large stack. However, they lost half of their Bitcoin. That's not coming back. They're not going to get 300,000 more Bitcoin back into that fund. Are you going to go with Grayscale or BlackRock if you're a huge player, right? You might have gone to Grayscale if they had the most Bitcoin and they were the biggest player in the sandbox, but now they're not. And so, I think eventually I'll have some losses somewhere and I'll just smother them up with the gains in GBTC and get out of it. And I don't know what I'll do, but it seems weird to make this move. Like, why not be a little more friendly or just step down your GBTC funds fee? And I don't know. It's just weird to me. I don't like how Grayscale's handled this at all. I think that from a business standpoint, I think that it's not very smart. From being a customer side, it's not very smart. It's like, just because you have your customers held hostage because of taxes doesn't mean you should, right? Like, that's not, why should I have any relationship with Grayscale? They did nothing to help me out here. And so I would like to leave. If I could get out in a way that I don't have to pay taxes, then I would get out in a heartbeat.
Yeah, if they would have done this from the get-go, would anybody have left? And yeah, I mean, the answer is, of course, is yes. With all the bankruptcy companies that needed to sell, they were going no matter what. But would anybody else, like, I mean, everybody else would have said, no, Grayscale is the person there. I mean, nobody likes BlackRock anyways, or most people don't, right? So why would you not stay with Grayscale if you knew they were going to take care of you and somebody like BlackRock was out there and you're wondering what they were going to do anyways?
Well, why not on day one, instead of seeding this thing with 10%, why not on day one seed it with 20%, right? They had 620,000 Bitcoin. They could have had 120,000 Bitcoin in their mini account and kept 480 in the big one. And people like me would just be like, my blended fee is still, you know, it's still high, but, you know, I don't want to pay these taxes and all this other stuff. And they would have had 120,000 Bitcoin head start on the low fee ETF race. Yeah. So they could have had a much better shot of competing with BlackRock and everybody else because they would have had all the liquidity. So I think they just, like, it's just dumb. It just feels dumb. It feels like a reactive move. It doesn't feel like this was part of a grand strategy. And so I don't like the way Grayscale's handled this from their side, much less from the customer side. I mean, the only thing they could have done worse has been like, yeah, we were 2% when we were a closed-ended fund and we were the only one. We're just going to be 2% as an ETF. Like, that would have been the only thing they could have done worse. So I'm looking forward to losing some money somewhere so I can cover it up with these gains.
Yeah. Well, speaking of kind of going back to some of the craziness in Bitcoin, if you want to see what is going to happen, looking at the bets of a group is a good way of doing that. And crypto has kind of allowed that with Polymarket. And one of the things that I saw that was really interesting was that the probability of the Feds keeping the rates steady this year has gone up a ton. So it used to be, I think, 7%. And now in the past couple of weeks, it's jumped up to like 32%. So inflation has been a lot hotter than expected. The job report came out way better. And now the economy is back to rocking and rolling, according to the Fed. And we might not see any of these rate cuts that they were initially planning, which is interesting and surprising at the same time.
Yeah, I think at the beginning of the year, they predicted 6 rate cuts this year. And now we're in the end of April with no rate cuts. And like you said, the fake numbers on the job reports, where I think we've added 500,000 jobs this year, 1.8 million part-time jobs and 1.3 million full-time jobs have been lost. So there's your 500,000 jobs gained on the year. But I think they're so stuck into, like, it's like earnings management when you're a public company, like massaging the numbers before each monthly reporting. It's like, all right, well, they're just so used to, oh, we want employment to look low to make us look good. They actually need to make unemployment look worse in order to, one, be more realistic, but two, we're not going to cut rates with 3.25% unemployment, and we're not going to cut, like, they're in trouble. I did hear some stupid theory where it was like, well, the high interest rate is increasing the CPI because of housing costs and things like that. And we need to lower the interest rate in order to decrease the CPI, decrease inflation by decreasing the interest rate. I'm like, this is the, we're just talking, they're just saying dumb things now. I'm so, more often than not, and mainly because of Bitcoin, I typically think of myself as above the fray. And I'm like, I'm just watching all of these games happen where all these kind of, these idiots in charge are saying all these things. And then these idiots that are not in charge believe it. And I'm just kind of out here, like, hanging out with Bitcoin and playing games with real estate and, you know, hard assets. And then they just, you know, I don't like it when they bomb people, but it's another part of the stupid game and printing money and all these things. But they're just saying stupid things. Like, quite frankly, interest rates are in the 5s. That's not in the 12s, right? So this isn't like we're at astronomical historical highs for interest rates. Why can't they just say, we're kind of at a normal interest rate? The economy is kind of cooking. And inflation is pretended to be under control, and unemployment is remarkably low. And so why can't they just say, yeah, we're good? And so 32% chance of no interest rate hike or interest rate decrease. Why isn't that like 75%? Because if the job report looks good and inflation looks good and unemployment looks good, like, it doesn't make any sense to be like, oh, we need to do something about this interest rate. So I guess they get so addicted to lying about stuff. I don't think they can stop.
Well, it was interesting, and not that you want to take your money lessons from a UFC fighter who's just been punched in the head multiple times, but there was a guy that won his UFC bout, and Joe Rogan was actually the one interviewing him, and he pretty much went on a minute and a half little spout talking about, hey, he's American, he loves his country, but he wants everybody to start reading about Austrian economics, and talked a little bit about how important Bitcoin was. And I think he keeps all his money now in Bitcoin because he doesn't trust it in the US dollar and losing its purchasing power. So, but it's just pretty cool to see someone on a pretty large stage, and not huge stage, but to come out and, instead of talking about how excited he was to win the fight, he starts talking about he loves his country and he wants people to wake up and start paying attention to what's going on.
Yeah. You know, that clip definitely hit my algorithm because it was like a kind of a mini viral thing. And it touched on the Bitcoin algorithm, and it touched on the UFC fighter algorithm. And those are two circles that don't overlap a lot in the Venn diagram. You know, I think you got a lot of more people looking like Vitalik in the Bitcoin side than you do, you know, this dude who's 8% body fat and you know, getting used to fighting for a living. But yeah, man, he was like, yeah, Reed Von Mises. I was like, that's a crazy thing for a UFC fighter to say out yeah. loud. But it was like, yeah, man, people should. And you should understand, like, oh, it's the Von Mises Austrian economics, in my mind, at least, it just like, it puts your feet back on the ground as far as how money works, you know, I grew up in a cash-based society and not a credit-based society, right? Like when I spent money, it was dollar bills out of a wallet for the first, I mean, I didn't have a credit card until I was in college. I barely had money before that. So I was very conservative about how I spent things, but also I felt the pain of breaking a 20 and getting back ones and fives and change and like, oh crap, those are going to just disappear, you know? But so like, you know, you don't feel that when you spend $18.10 with a credit card. There, you know, it eliminates the chunk nature of cash. And anyway, people don't have that. They're just floating in this credit card, swipe a credit card. You know, a lot of people don't look at price. They just, I want to buy these things. They put it all in the basket and then they go check out and then they scan it. And quite frankly, I would love to do a quiz as people walk out of a grocery store and ask them how much they just spent and see what percentage of people say, I don't know, because a lot of people just don't. It seems absolutely insane to me, but I've seen it a bunch. It's wild. So to me, yeah, people need to put their feet back on the ground. You know, I talk about it a lot, like Bitcoin is something you can depend on. It doesn't lie to you. It tries its best every 10 minutes to do a block. If you do a transaction and you move Bitcoin from A to B, it makes sure that that Bitcoin is real Bitcoin and it moves from A to B and then it verifies that it did. Like, there's just not a lot of things going on right now that you can trust. Like, we just ran through government statistics, like the least trustable thing out there. And so, yeah, man, he's right. People should read Von Mises and people should at least have an understanding of Austrian economics and see if that fits their mentality and what they believe in money as compared to this Keynesian stuff where it's like we can print money to infinity and there's no penalty.
Yeah. I have, so going back to buying food at the grocery store, I have the conversation with my wife all the time. I'm like, oh, how much is that? She's like, I have no idea. I'm like, what? Same. Like, seriously, like, you just bought a $6 bag of pretzels when you could have bought this $1 bag of pretzels. Like
the tags, the grocery store has bright yellow tags or special looking tags for things that are buy one, get one free or on sale. So it's like, I pretty much look at the tags first and then see what foods are available. You know, it's like, and when I go to a restaurant, like, you know, it's not just the left side of the menu for me. You know, I don't look at just the words. Right on the right side of the menu is where they put the dollar values, and so the right side of the menu is 80% of where I order from, man. It's just built in, and I think I thought that was normal, and I think it's a vast minority of people that think like I do and order like I do and shop like I do.
Well, I think you're starting to see menus without prices on it too, which is crazy to me. Or nobody cares, right? They're just like, oh, I'll get this and whatever it is, I'll pay for it. So kind of crazy.
Yeah. Yeah. I see that. I mean, I live in a small town, super traditional, everything. And this one restaurant, I love them. They're awesome. It's like a mom and a daughter deli, and they have garlic parmesan jalapeno wings that are freaking awesome. But hot wings have been like the craziest commodity to try to peg a price to ever since COVID. Hot wings price have been all over the place. And so they were constantly like changing the board and changing the board and changing the board. And finally they took it off. And so I just go in and I ask them how much are 10 hot wings today? And they're like, oh, it's $15. I'm like, sounds good. One time it was like $22. I'm like, I'll have a sandwich. Oh, this is good. What a weird freaking time to be focused on money.
Yeah. Well, speaking of money, and we've talked about Coinbase in the past, Kraken's probably the other big exchange out there, and they have made an announcement that's pretty interesting. They are going to release their new wallet here pretty soon, if they haven't released it already, but it's going to be the first one that's open sourced from a centralized exchange, which is kind of interesting. And I think it's going to support like 8 blockchains to start with, but I mean, Coinbase definitely has the lead in the centralized exchanges expanding around the world and definitely in the US. Kraken's one of those that they've been around a while, I'll be honest, their user interface is not nearly as good as Coinbase's. So there are things they have that Coinbase doesn't that I will use them for. But for the most part, I would rather use Coinbase over Kraken from a centralized exchange perspective.
Yeah, you know, it's funny. We haven't ever talked about this, but I used Kraken a little bit because they have, I have all these like legacy altcoins that I just picked up over the years, early years.
You're welcome.
And yeah, that's you. That's all you. And so, you know, over the last couple of years, I'm like, man, I got to clean this stuff up. So I was moving stuff around. Well, Kraken had like an earn thing before Coinbase did. And so I had money in Kraken for, or I didn't have money in Kraken. I had digital assets at Kraken. And so I put, I had money over there. Well, then Coinbase kind of did their Coinbase earn thing. And I'm like, well, I'm just, I'd rather have everything in one spot. It's not going to be a Kraken. It's going to be a Coinbase. So I moved everything over there. So, I mean, I like Kraken. It wasn't like they did a bad job. They gave me my tax reporting stuff and it seemed like it was correct. And their user interface is not, I don't know, it's different. I don't know if it's better or worse. I just, I'm used to Coinbase. So maybe that's, you know, that's the benefit of being the incumbent, right? Is you're, everybody's used to using all your idiosyncrasies on your user interface and they're not used to the other one. So yeah, I mean, I'm with you.
Yeah. So the other thing that I forgot to mention during we talked about the happening was BitMEX decided to allow people to take advantage of all the craziness in the price that was supposed to happen with Bitcoin. So they raised their leverage trading from 100x to 250x, which is just crazy to me. But they were like, yeah, take advantage of it. And who, I don't know who wants to trade at 250x. But apparently
who's fast enough? In. You'd have to have an algorithm to do that. Because, I mean, if you drop, I mean, what is that, 0.4%? If you drop 0.4%, you're liquidated?
Yeah.
Something like that, 0.38? Like, that's, nobody's fast enough to do that. You'd have to just guess right and it would only go up. But like, yep. I have that one time I did some tax loss harvesting and I was selling Bitcoin. It was driving me insane to watch the price fluctuations up and down over the short period because I was like, I do not want to lose stack. And with my luck, this thing's going to shoot up right when I sell. Then I can't buy back and I'm never going to see, you know, I got to come out with more money and da da da. Da. So I cannot trade on leverage. I am not built for that at all. Like, but at around the halving, oh, I know. So one of my buddies couldn't make it to the get together and he's like, for a small town to have two people like me and him in it that are as deep into Bitcoin as we are, I think is surprising. And so I met him for lunch on Friday when it was halving day. And so my other buddies were texting me like, hey, you want to grab lunch? I'm like, oh, sorry, man, I got a Bitcoin lunch. You know, one of those guys who doesn't get into Bitcoin was like, oh, is it like a good time to buy or sell or what? And I'm like, I'm not a good person to ask, man. I've never sold Bitcoin. Every time I've sold it, I bought it immediately back just for the tax reasons. And so yeah, I got off on a tangent there, but you know, around the halving, people were talking about it. People knew what was going on. And then some people have no idea. So.
Yeah. Well, I know I'm going to switch topics and get off of Bitcoin for a quick second, but there are some interesting things that happened. So Ernst & Young, which is one of the big four consulting companies, yeah. They have a business contract platform called Nightfall. It has historically been on Polygon, which is layer two on Ethereum. And what they're finding is that just because it's on layer two doesn't mean it's secure, right? So everything that's on the blockchain is still available. If it's on a private blockchain, it doesn't matter. So what they are doing is Nightfall is now based on kind of a ZK rollups. Right. And they're moving it back to Ethereum for now on the layer one. And then they plan on moving it to a layer three, which starts to get really confusing. Right. But it is, I think the main thing to take out of this that I thought was interesting is the importance of security. And their view is that once you learn about it, you realize how important ZK rollups are for security. So we talked about this at the beginning of the year that, or even last year, that the ZK rollup side of the theme is going to become bigger as people understand more about it. And I still think it's a couple years away before it really becomes bigger and works well too, right? It's still kind of figuring out where things are going, but it is interesting that
one of the largest consulting companies in the world, is now saying that ZK rollups is kind of the way that they need to move moving forward.
Yeah, I like Ernst & Young has about as much credibility as anybody. I mean, for them to be looking at stuff, I think is part of the signal.
Well, and then on top of that, you have one of the Coinbase execs who is kind of in charge of their business development is now leaving Coinbase, and he is going to Matter Labs. I think it's a he, which Matter Labs is pretty much the one that is creating a layer two on Ethereum, ZK Sync, right? Which is a zero knowledge. So you're starting to see more of this happening and that transition start to happen. And maybe it's just a couple things in this timeline that happened near the same time. But to me, it was just kind of one of those, it's exciting to see ZK stuff kind of pop into the news, Tim.
Well, I mean, it also feels like it's kind of about time for more of these things to start popping off and more development to happen and more, you know, people to be more public about what they're doing. You know, when the price is up, people are talking more about different things, innovation, and look at us, you know, they're kind of fighting for news articles or fighting for some spotlight. When Bitcoin price was at 20 and everybody's altcoins were down 80%, nobody's talking about what they're doing or how they're moving or things like that. So I think that it'll get more and more easy to have things to talk about on the altcoin side as everybody's kind of fighting for, you know, when you get a little bit of internet hit, a little viral activity, a little things like that, the price goes up, right? Like, I mean, it's just people are like, oh, this is moving, we got to get into it. So I think, yeah, I think we're all in for a wild ride. And while that's happening, real things will happen on these, you know, to these coins and to these organizations. So yeah, that's, you know, the news is picking up.
Yeah. So kind of tying back into the SEC and some of the news that they created here in the past, CZ's sentencing is due in about a week. So I think on the 30th of April. So he's been on house arrest here in the US for a few months. And I guess they'll determine what's going to happen at that point. But that's kind of just something to keep your eye on. And then the other thing that the SEC has done is they are trying to go after Justin Sun and Tron. And they went after him before. And I think Tron's or Sun's attorneys pretty much said, you don't have jurisdiction over me or over not in the US. And they have modified their proposal, whatever they call it, that Justin Sun spent 400 days in the U.S. in between like 2017 and 2019. So that gives them jurisdiction to kind of go after him. So we'll see what happens there. It's another thing that, yes, great, the SEC is going after them, but man, it'd be really nice if they would just set up some rules for crypto in general on what people can do instead of trying to just constantly go after people that it's not going to help anything at this point.
Yeah. So when I was in the power industry, we had to go through some anti-bribery stuff because it's kind of rampant on 8, 9, and 10 figure deals to kind of bribe the people that are involved in the decision-making. And even if you're outside of the United States and your customer's outside of the United States and everybody is outside of the United States, if you send an email that pings off of a U.S. server, now you're under U.S. jurisdiction and you and your company are liable for the legal implications. So the U.S. has a tendency to be able to punish people no matter where they are for whatever reason. There's like a few places they can go without extradition policies. But yeah, when it comes to digital crime, if it crosses the U.S. borders, they have ways of declaring that they have jurisdiction. And so I would imagine if they want to go after you, they're going to go after you, right? Like they're going to get you. So that, but I'm with you. Tell me the rules and I'll try not to break them.
Yeah. Like,
quit telling me the rules and what I did wrong after, you know, what did I do in 2017 and 2018?
Yeah. Like,
that's a long time ago.
Yeah. So kind of crazy. And then another big thing that we've talked about in the past is, I think gaming is going to be a pretty big theme moving forward just to get people into crypto. And it's one of those times, I mean, coin price hasn't really changed very much here lately. It's going up and down a few thousand dollars, but the gaming coins took a big hit in the past week or so. I mean, most of them were down about 30% on average. So if gaming is something that you're interested in, now might be a good time to to go look at some of those coins and jump in if you think now is a good time to move forward for the future.
Throw out some names. Like, I don't know gaming coins. I can't keep track of altcoins and which ones are in which category. Like, you know, any big ones off the top of your head?
So, I mean, I think one of the big, I don't know if it's a layer one or whatever you want to call it, but Alluvium is kind of one of the big ones. That's a big player that a bunch of, they're using a lot of those. Everybody's building off of Alluvium, right? So, or I think that's who it is. I'm really interested in Superverse, Super. So Elio Trades is one of the guys that I follow, and he's huge into gaming, and he created that. So I'm intrigued to see what happens there, because they're kind of partnering with a lot of the games too to run everything on that. But I mean, there's so many of them. I'm definitely not a gaming expert, but it is kind of intriguing just to scratch the surface. I mean, in reality, there's so much going on in crypto that you almost have to find your niche, and whether it's gaming or something else. I mean, look at what's going on with Bitcoin and ordinals and runes and all that stuff. There's a ton of opportunity for somebody that wants to make money to go get into the niche early, because most likely runes are going to follow what Ethereum's NFT market did in the past. And if you can figure out how to do that, and the little that I've looked into it, I was like, I understand the Ethereum NFT space. I don't understand the runes NFT space. It doesn't make any sense to me. So if you jump in, there's an opportunity to make money. And this will not be the last time there's an opportunity in something new coming on. You just have to take the time to go pay attention to it.
Yeah. Yeah. Like you talk about getting a niche and getting educated. You know, when I was younger, you would have like, oh, he's a gadget guy. And so he would have like the new TV, the new VCR, the new camera, the new, like basically he's just into all of the gadgets. And then now you can't be a gadget guy. You have to be like a camera guy, because the mm-hmm. details in that one niche run so deep. And so to me, that's, it feels the same way in crypto and Bitcoin. If you're a Bitcoin person and you're all about Bitcoin, there's so much to freaking learn that you don't have time to spend on other stuff. And like you said, with runes and ordinals and inscriptions, like I don't get that stuff. I haven't really tried. I spent some time reading about it when it first came out, just to try to get my head around it. And I haven't done that with runes, because like my head's, you know, Bitcoin sends me down the macroeconomic side. I'm super interested in that. So it's like, man, you could be a Bitcoin person, and like, and the same on the technical side, like how inscriptions get written into the blockchain via different comments that I never do. When I do a transaction, it's like clicking buttons. I don't type anything. You know, I'm not copying and pasting code into my transactions. And so I'm like, I don't even know what software you would use in order to open up the ability to alter those comment sections. And so I'm as deep into Bitcoin as anybody, you know, but it's like, if you're not technical, you're not going to get onto that side. And so, yeah, if you're like, oh, I'm into crypto, like, no, you're not. You can't be a crypto guy. You have to be like a very specific type of crypto guy. Otherwise, you're just dabbling in a lot of things and you're going to get your head knocked off.
Yeah. And then one of the last things I had was, we've talked about when companies are trying new things and kind of taking over other markets. And we've, in the past, we've talked about there is this plan for a decentralized Uber and things like that. Most people have probably heard about OnlyFans. I never used them, definitely have seen about it. There, Solana had someone clone OnlyFans and put it on Solana. It's called Only One. It'll be interesting to see what happens. They're talking, making kind of a splash and saying there's going to be a bunch of creators that jump onto it. One of the interesting pieces to all of this, the little that I read about it, is that what Solana is doing is they are allowing 0% fees on all the tips and kind of the extra fees that you get. Versus OnlyFans takes like 20% of that, right? So it is now giving the power and a lot more money back to the people. OnlyFans had a huge issue where things were getting censored and all that kind of stuff in the past. Now on Solana, it is theoretically going to have a much more lenient governance version of that. So it'll be intriguing to see what happens, right? I probably won't pay too much attention. I just kind of saw that come across my desk and I was like, oh, that's kind of interesting that everything's moving over to Web3 to have more power and control.
While we were talking, I had a thought on the gambling, online gambling side, but it ties into this. So for me, you're a content creator. and you move over to from OnlyFans to Solana's version. Okay. Zero difference for you, except for now you're collecting Solana instead of US dollar. Like on your screen, instead of a dollar bill sign, it has a Solana SOL thing. And if you're on the customer side, you're likely putting it on your credit card to spend money on this stuff, and it's popping up on your credit card as OnlyFans, and now it's going to pop up as Only One, or you know, whatever the business is. There's no it doesn't feel any different from the customer side. It definitely doesn't feel different at all, because you're basically turning your actual US dollars into some tokenized either OnlyFans dollars or Solana dollars. Who cares, right? What the exchange rate is whatever it is. But now if you're on the receiving end, you're not receiving US dollars. You could choose to go into dollars, or you choose to keep it at Solana and see if it goes up. And so in my head, because my friend, it just got into some like gambling, online gambling, sports gambling stuff. And he sent a screenshot of like all the different things you can gamble on in a game. Like the next pitch is a ball. I mean, it's like crazy level of gambling, which is insane that they're not allowing people to go out of their bank accounts and into Bitcoin, but gambling on if the next pitch is a ball or a strike is totally fine. But if you had a gambling site like that, if DraftKings or all these other ones, if they're like, hey, you can store it in US dollars, or you can store it in Bitcoin, or you could store it in Ethereum or any of these other things, it's like, you know, why wouldn't you gamble on your gambling? Like that makes sense to me. And so I was like, man, if DraftKings switches over and just has a version where they allow you to keep everything in Bitcoin, and I think a lot of online poker still has Bitcoin as their online currency to get into games and stuff. It's like it seems like a natural fit.
Well, I mean, I think the big thing was the whole ESG narrative that used to be where they didn't want certain industries to be able to have access to bank accounts and things like that, right? So this definitely falls into one of those markets that they would rather not exist, right? If they could control the world. So this putting it somewhat decentralized gives people the ability to do whatever they want without having to have permission from any government to say, oh yeah, you're allowed to do this, you're not allowed to do this.
Right. The government could easily say, hey, Visa, this is only one is a non-acceptable vendor. You have to disallow it. Okay, right. Well, now I can go to Coinbase. I can put my money into Coinbase. I can buy Solana on Coinbase, transfer my Solana over, and now I can buy and spend as I want. So, yeah, I mean, it's guess who's going to win, right? It's the guys that want to do stuff. It's, you know, it's like, I mean, that's guess why cell phones are big, right? So people can watch OnlyFans on their phone. Like that's guess why DVDs work, you know? Like they won over VHS, and they won over Blu-ray and all that other stuff. It's the same stuff. That's why we have high-speed internet. Like this is the dumbest thing that pushes technology, but it always does.
Well, I mean, the crazy part is the dirty little secret is the porn industry is probably the driving technology market for a lot of things, right? I mean, it is the reason that VR is happening, and just technology in general is happening because people tried it there because of that. And I think prostitution was kind of one of the original first jobs ever in the world, right? I mean, that was what started it all, right? So
there are people that will spend money on this, even if that's all the money they got. If it's got to be between eating or doing that, it's a tough call. And so guess what, man, there's a lot of money in it. And if there's a lot of money in it, then you can do some venture capital type investments because the returns are there. And you know, they're going to be there, and they're not going to stop being there.
Yeah. So I'm sure everybody wasn't expecting for the conversation to go this way here by the end of this, but that's all that I had on my end. Anything else that we missed on your end?
I think that's a great way to stop right there. That's perfect.
Yeah. All right. Awesome. Well, Hal, as always, great chatting with you, and we'll chat again next week with the latest in crypto.
Sounds good. Thanks, Jason.
See ya.
If all of these crypto conversations leave you with more questions and you're looking for answers, I've created a product that dives into most of those answers, including why crypto, how to set up a cold wallet, and some of the more advanced strategies for dealing with crypto. Check the link in the notes below. And hope to see you there.